This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And also, we are going to talk about one of your requests. We've been asking people to leave us comments on Apple Podcasts. Just leave a rating, 5 stars preferable, as well as a comment requesting an old
rapper. Let's just commit to the 5 stars. It's easy.
You know, leave us 6 stars. Let's just say that. Six stars, something around that. Leave us a comment with an old graphic novel or trade collection or something like that, and we will review it at some point on the show. This week, we're going to be reviewing Asterios Polyp, and we'll get into whether it is or is not one of the greatest graphic novels of all time. Most of the world agrees it's one of the greatest graphic novels of all time. We'll see if anybody on this podcast disagrees, but let's kick it off with some new stuff first. Earth Prime Stargirl, number one from DC Comics, written by James Robinson and Paula Sevenbergen, art by Jerry Ordway. Now, this is part of the event that DC has been running with the Arrowverse shows, taking them in comics continuity, taking some of the writing team and allowing them to tackle the comic book world, but through this TV world, all building up to a big event. The trick here, though, is that we got a Stargirl comic from James Robinson, who is writing on Stargirl.
My guy.
But is also one of the greatest comic book writers of all time. So that said, you got him. You got Jerry Ordway, great comic book artist as well. So
classic.
I know we've been a little back and forth about these, but this felt like just at a base level, a slam dunk to me of a comic book. What'd you guys think?
Well, I thought it was a great continuation of the TV show. I thought it had a lot of the same beats. Really love the Mike in here. You know what I mean? We got some great Mikey lines. You know, he's over it. He's like, you know, Dad, why don't you go for a hike? I mean, come on. These are just classic Mikey one-liners, and it's nice to see.
Wow.
Just real
James
quick,
Robbie,
on that note,
grasping it.
James, I don't know how he got inside that Mikey head space and was able to really master this.
Quick note about plot: the family is headed out on a much deserved break after the events of season 2 of Stargirl. They're going camping together, but that gets interrupted by an old supervillain of Pat Dugan's by the name of the Beetle. And then it spins off into something entirely different after that. Justin, you're a huge James Robinson fan. What'd you think about this one?
Yeah, you're a
huge fan. I'm Needlehead, a huge fan of the original Starman series, James Robinson's work on that, some of the other larger university expanded out from there, bringing back a big nostalgia flavor to comic books, I think has really expanded into so much of modern comics. This, first off, Pete, you had to be psyched about the Luke Wilson of it all here. Like, truly, what a... It's like you could take one of these... it'll just put it on your wall and kiss it every night before you go to bed. but no reaction there, no problems. That means it's going to happen. As compared to the other sort of Earth Prime stuff that we've seen, where they really are sort of just like a little bottle episode spinning out of the TV series, this feels like a comic book, and I was psyched about that. We get some connections to a larger world I won't spoil later on. And the Jerry Ordway art lends this sort of classic focus. Yeah. The last page is beautiful and sweet, and it's a fun read.
It's adorbs.
The Needle in particular, the villain, it's funny. It almost pivots from being about Stargirl, being about Pat Dugan and all of those characters about halfway through the book. It just focuses on this weird, obscure supervillain, and that to me is... Primo James Robinson. It feels like something that could have been in the Starman comic book and would have fit right in there. So in my mind, this is easily the best of these Earth Prime books so far, and worth a pickup even if you aren't reading Stargirl. If you're a fan of James Robinson's book, obviously Paula Sevenbergen also worked on this as well, so I don't want to diminish that accomplishment. But great comic. Very fun. Next up, Savage Avengers, number one from Marvel, written by David Peoples, who I believe we've had on the live show before.
We have.
Art by Colt Magno. And this is his first work for Marvel. This is, as you could probably figure out from the title, a bunch of the most savage Avengers all teaming together to save Conan from some time-traveling adventure. Specifically, Deathlok is gunning for him. Pete, this seems right up your alley. What did you think about this book?
Hell yeah, it is. You got Deathlok, you got Conan. You know, there's a lot of fighting. There's a ton of action. This is just, you got like a Hulk Wolverine thing going on in here. This
Hulk
is just
Wolverine, baby.
Hulk Wolverine, yeah. Hulk-verine. You even got a little cloak and dagger. I mean, this is just your childhood fighting itself. It's great. It's a lot of fun, you know. You got some sweet Venom stuff going on. Yeah, this is a great mix them up of a lot Anti-Venom. Of like, Anti-Venom. He's in the white suit. It's very cool. Brings you back. I just think it's a ton of fun and it's well executed.
I agree. This book, like Savage Avengers, I feel like it has the flavor of like a all knife points X-Force book from like 10 years ago, where it's like, oh, this book's going to go hard. Let's see what they do. And unlike some executions in this style, this book does go hard. It goes hard and fast. It touches on a lot of different pockets of the Marvel Universe that are sort of on the extreme edge in a great way. I got sort of emotional, psyched when I saw Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the Cloak and Dagger TV show in a way where I was like, oh, I love these characters. I want to see them. They're always right in the pattern where they're just like, oh, there's some trouble over here. And Cloak's like, you know, I've been thinking about our relationship. And, I really want it. And it's just like, of course he's saying that. And then something horrible blows out of his face or whatever. Like, it's just all right there.
I just want to throw out there, it's interesting that you say blow out of his face, the one place that's actually solid on him.
Yes, right. His face.
Well, yeah, that's his face, other than blowing his nose, like nothing's really coming out of his face. The rest of his body, lots of stuff coming out of there.
And the way I will like lightly spoil where we end here. We're moving into sort of a Conan world. And we were talking about Marvel sort of losing Conan, right?
Pete, as a property. You're on our news beat.
Yes, yeah, in July we're losing it.
So it feels like
King Conan's going to be the last with that Jason Aaron's doing.
It feels like maybe this will be sort of the last use of Conan, and I feel like this could really be like an epic send-off in the pages of this book, as well as the King Conan stuff. That
I'll tell you what, it's really hard to lose so many different Conans in the same year. Conan the Barbarian, Conan the O'Brien.
Team Coco.
Team Coco. House of Slaughter. That's what's going on with the Conans in the world. Number 6, Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV and Sam Johns. Script by Sam Johns. Art by Letizia Catanici. In this issue, we're kicking off a new arc here, focusing on the people who have red masks instead of white masks and black
masks.
Right.
They're in Scarlet. The house. Yes. They're in the House of Slaughter.
You they're know, in like the house.
People go the out house. And they do slaughtering, but you know, someone's got to take care of the house part.
But
you know what I mean?
This is a very different type of story. It is shepherded by Sam Johns. It's a little moodier. It's a little more introspective. It's a little more emo purposely as well, given
creepy
the characters that they're following.
Feels.
You got a creeper librarian. You got a weird chess match going on here, but still.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Really enjoying the spinoff. Good times.
Now, Pete, you're a huge Alfred guy. So like any sort of house care must be sort of like a real feather in your cap.
I hate you. But I think that regardless of where we kind of point the kind of camera, if you will, in this House of Slaughter stuff, I'm so happy to learn more about the different kind of teams and how they work together and all this kind of stuff. So I've been eating this up. James Tynion IV is killing it. And I really appreciate the fact that we're really kind of getting to see a lot of different stuff in this series, exploring the world.
It's crazy to me that a book like Something is Killing the Children and this spinning out of that, I am almost more pulled in by this book than the title that the sort of much more popular
How
title that it started.
Dare you.
Not an insult to that, because that book is still great, but the open world nature of this and the way they're exploring everything, all the possibilities here, it has, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you were a Harry Potter fan back in when you were younger. This has that same feel with like a harder edge to it, a little more horror. It's exciting. I really love this book.
Next up, Duo, number one from DC Comics, written by Greg Pak, art by Coy Pham. In this issue, we are meeting two scientists who are working with nanobots. They end up in a big accident, and some things get weird and horrible from there. Pete, I know you're freaking out about this book. Talk about it a little bit.
All right, well, get ready, because Duo number one is one of the greatest first issues of all time. Check your pants for kick prints, because it's a fucking pack attack. It's unbelievable. You got this really interesting world. It's really unbelievable. Art, a fun last page reveal. This is everything you want in a first issue, baby. Come out!
Check your pants for kick prints is maybe one of my favorite things you've ever said to the page. And just to give a little background on that, Greg Pak, when he would come on our live show, would often say it's a real kick in the pants. It's almost a catchphrase for him. And we called it out as such. And the fact that you are using it and bouncing it back, Pete, that's my review. If Pete loves it, I love Pete's love. I mean, but more specifically, like, Greg Pak's a great comic book writer, and to have him create something that is like brand new and sort of a Firestorm adjacent type character, to give you a little bit of a sense, but dealing with more of a relationship. And honestly, this character feels like Greg Pak. Yeah, am I reaching when I say that this may be a personal story for the pocket talk here? It's very fun, and the fact that it's for DC Comics, even more fun. Yeah.
This to me felt like a top tier Valiant book, just in terms of being weird sci-fi, strange new world things going on in a very specific place that don't seem connected to anything else. The art is real good from Coy Pham as well. I agree with you guys. Really enjoyed this book. Definitely check this out if you're looking for a new, weird, messed up, kind of horrific sci-fi horror book. Next up, speaking of horror, I Hate This Place, number one from Image Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Artyom Toplin. And the just to give you an idea of what's about to come your way, the actual name of this book is Fuck This Place. It's not I Hate This Place. They had to censor it for the comic book stance. But the idea here is a couple inherits a house. They move to the house and quickly find out the house has everything wrong with it that you could possibly imagine.
Just move.
Ghosts. Can't move. They can't move. Ghosts, UFOs, horrible creatures, absolutely everything else.
Mobsters, Antler Man. This shit's bad.
Oh my God. It's great. This is not like Kyle Stark's previous comedy stuff, though there is some dark humor going on here, but it is so over the top, as he talks about in the back matter. It is a mashup of every single horror thing he could think of to make it the ultimate horror book. Love this introduction. Cannot wait to see what happens here and how absolutely terrible things are going to get, particularly with the ending. Pete, go ahead.
Well, first off, I just don't understand. If you get to a place and then you find out it's haunted, you just don't unpack. You turn around and whatever money you just lost, you eat it so you can live your life.
You eat the money?
You eat it. You just eat it. You say, you know what? It's better to live in a cardboard box and survive than go into this hell house. It drives me nuts when I'm yelling at people, but This is just like it's saying in the back. It's just over the top fun and just turned up to 11, kind of haunted house style. So I'm very interested to see where this goes and how this all unfolds. It's completely insane.
What's hard to establish in a first issue of a comic is tone. You lay out a premise, you put some characters out there. That's usually sort of what you get. And then you move forward from there. This comic does such a great job of being establishing the tone of like, hey, this is a fucked up place and these characters are stuck there. And it's just a pile on of different things. It reminded me a little bit of Cabin in the Woods. If you guys remember that great movie that was sort of like almost like a catch-all of horror movies, as the reveal later on in the movie sort of tells us. this sort of has a little bit of that energy with some characters who are put upon, but cute, charming, seemingly great relationship here. Definitely a fun first issue this week.
Breakout number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Wilton Santos. We really dug the first issue of this book that took place in a world where every once in a while kids are taken by the giant floating cubes in the sky, and a bunch of kids decide, you know what, we're going to fight back. We're going to break into these cubes, conversely to the title of the book,
and
break out some people who are inside the cubes. Hence the title of the book.
Goops.
And that's where we pick up here as they put their Ocean's 11 style plan together, only for everything to go terribly wrong, at least at first. We love the first issue, as I mentioned. What do we think about the second one?
Well, I really like the kind of choice that we're making here. Like, at first, it was kind of like this thing of that, like, hanging over them as they're trying to live their lives kind of in fear of who's going to take in and what's going to happen. I like the fact that we're working on a plan and we've got some kind of personal interest in who's taken and how we can try to get them back. I think this is exciting. I think I really like how it's moving forward, and I kind of liked the kind of character build-up monologue to kind of explain the kind of reasons behind it. I thought great, kind of taking something that we already loved and turning the intensity up a little bit, moving the story forward. Hell of a follow-up issue. I'm still enjoying the crap out of this.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's borrows hugely from Ocean's 11 to the point where in this issue they're like, hey, my mom wants to watch Ocean's 11. Do you want to watch it? And we get a couple like frames. Like, and I appreciate like using that reference in the story and then actually referencing it in the comic, taking ownership of it, really fun. But the tone of this is so strong. The sci-fi world and stakes are super well established in the last issue and this issue. And the fact that it's moving quickly to the point where shit goes down at the end of the issue, that is scary. I'm psyched.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the next issue in particular as we're really starting to get to it. Next up, Shadow Warzone number 1 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, Nadia Seamus, Ed Bryson, Stephanie Phillips, art by Otto Schmidt, Sweeney Boo, Mike Bowden, and Ann Molina. It's the cutest name in comics, I'm sorry.
Sweeney Boo!
Sweeney Boo! This is an anthology book following the Shadow Warzone, what's it called?
Shadow War?
Warzone?
I don't know. There's some sort of event happening.
Shadow Warzone.
There you go. Anyway, there's an event happening with Deathstroke, and he's fighting a bunch of Batmans or whatever. I don't even care. Pete, talk about this.
Oh, my
wow,
God.
Wow, Alex. What is going on?
I should have done more research. This is on me.
Okay. Well, regardless, shit's going down. And there's this kind of, I can't believe I'm the guy explaining this, but the, what's his, this is horrible.
This is my nightmare. Normally I just say bananas and then we move on.
Pete, who are you trying to think of? Deathstroke?
Yeah, no, never mind.
Just say what you liked about the book. It's
okay, good. Let's just stick to what I'm good at here. I thought this was a really fun story. I loved the art in this. The moment where Canary and Oracle are on the phone together was really badass and fantastic. I like what's happening here. If Ra's al Ghul is, dead or, is dead and who did it and all this kinds of stuff.
Ra's al Ghul.
Fuck all y'all. I just like the kind of dealing with the ripple effects of that and what does that mean for everybody else. And I think that this is a kind of a cool event to explore that. So hells to the yeah.
It's interesting to do an event this way where it is like sort of just touching on different elements of mostly Bat continuity here. But the first story dealing with the spin out of Ra's al Ghul dying, where we focus on Black Canary, I thought was like great. I'm in the tank for Josh Williamson's work in general, but I thought this was awesome. But the other stories I liked as well, like dropping in on different characters dealing with their own shit that is only loosely related at first and assuming it's going to sort of tie up in different ways. Talia is a character I've always loved, but she's used from the Batman the Animated Series. She's used mostly in the DC Universe as a villain who comes in and is like, well, I did this. And to actually be in her head more is exciting. She's skirting that line in a Catwoman way of could be a hero someday. Orphan Maker, and then we get a final story.
Justin, I just want to say, if you really like her, you know, in the Arrowverse, they really explored her character a little bit more. So I would say check that out maybe.
Really? Mm-hmm. The Arrowverse, that's TV, right?
Yeah.
That's on television. Okay. Mm-hmm.
CW used to be a thing. I don't know how much of a thing it is anymore, but
not much, man. Not much.
Losing ground. Then we get Harley Quinn at the end. Doing some fun. I like this sort of across the board dropping in. I'm curious what the event is amounting to.
The Fox, number one from Archie Comics, written by Dean Hashbeal, Vito Del Sante, and Alex Toth. Art by Dean Hashbeal, Richard Ortiz, and Alex Toth. We had the writing team.
I was gonna say, it's too bad we didn't have Mom to talk about this.
We did, though. We had them on the live show a couple of weeks back.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
And we talked about this book, and we read this book to talk about it.
That's a weird coincidence. What did you guys think about this now that it is out in the wild?
What I think these guys are like, have been working at comics for so long, have been consuming comics. Check out our chat with them, because we talk about literally how long we've known them, how long they've been working. Vito worked at Jim Hanley's Universe for like 10 years. Like, these people are steeped in comics, and you see it in the work. Like, there's a depth here. Like, there's a great panel on like the sixth page of the front story that Dean Hashbeal does, where it's the Fox looking out over the city saying, why does the story have to end? And it's just one panel in the middle of like a larger story. And there's just a depth here. There's meaning placed in each of these. And that is exciting to see.
And also some great humor as well. I also love how the artists in this book really kind of, when you have the Fox, you don't have a lot of facial stuff to work with, so they kind of like using the bigger eyes and stuff to kind of share with how the Fox is feeling. Love it. Just so great. I think this is a great package, definitely worth checking out.
I'm Austin Lugo.
I'm Andrew Harp.
This is With Nothing to Say,
and let's talk about movies. With over 3,000 films log, Andrew and I, best friends since middle school, have dedicated our lives to watching, making, and talking about movies. Each week, Andrew and I handpick a movie he's seen, I've seen, or neither of us have seen, and dive deep into anything and everything to wannabe cinephiles could ever think of. From horror to dramedy, we do it all. So join us as we talk about everything movies, and maybe you too can become a bona fide cinephile.
Hello, my name is Silas, and I'm one of the hosts on Uploading Podcast. On my show, we talk about tech and gaming news stories that you probably wouldn't hear about on other podcasts.
Japanese gaming furniture brand Bahamut launched its first gaming bed.
We'll also chip in our own quirky opinions and a lot of weird adult jokes.
This version of her has very... they took the boobs.
It's just coming out soon.
That's what he said.
That's what Intel said. So if you enjoy that, search Uploading Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alice Ever After, number two from Boom Studios, written by Dan Panosian, art by Giorgio Spalletta. This comic book, if you missed a review of the first issue, is about what if Alice was... man. Actually crazy and doing drugs and sort of works on things from there, weaving in ideas from both Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass into this more realistic take on it. Here we find Alice in an insane asylum and dealing with various characters there. Man, I continue to love this book. It's very off kilter to read, which is in line with Lewis Carroll's books, but the art by Giorgio Spalletta in particular is really gorgeous and beautiful to look at. Love the designs here. Love all the hints and teases to other characters throughout the Lewis Carroll continuity. Great stuff.
Yeah, this book is it's got a dark edge to it, And it's kind of a nightmare scenario where it's like, well, what if Alice was just imagining all this and then was kind of in this horrible situation? And yeah, it's scary. And, you know, I'm a little worried about what's going to happen to Alice. But man, the art and the storytelling is fantastic. But yeah, I love the kind of attention that this story brings.
This book is so dark. Yeah. It's dark. Everything's sad all the time with this. Everything's stressful. I feel like a lot of books sort of that do this take a storybook character and pull them into the real world, keep some of that like fanciful escape. This Alice feels like she has no way out and only bad things are going to happen to her.
Oh, well, but I think that's consistent with the books, though, because in the books, it's just like she's having a total nightmare the entire time. Terrible things are happening to her constantly, and they're presented in this very cheeky, arch way, but this feels very true to the source material to me.
I mean, I agree with you, but we didn't check back in with Alice's reality and be like, oh, she's drowning. And it feels like this book is like, oh, man, this fantasy world is stressful. And there's like, and if you think that's stressful, check out reality. It sucks too. And it's like, I'm like, okay, that's hard. It's hard to take in.
Anyway, great book though. King Spawn number 10 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Javi Fernandez. In this issue, we're getting a black, white, and red book, but with Spawn as there is a battle royale to make the right news. King Spawn, Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Well, this continues to kind of move forward in such a cool way for Spawn. It's hard to focus. It sounds like somebody's car is exploding in the background. I am very excited for what's happening with Spawn and this whole thing of like, will he take the throne or not? And what does that mean? And how are we going to kind of save the day here? And I really, you know, it's this thing of like, does Spawn deserve this kind of happy ending a little bit, or this world where he and Wanda could maybe be happy? And what does that mean? And, you know, like all this kinds of stuff that's been dealing with for a while, but it's kind of feeling fresh and new again. I'm having a blast.
I would shout out the art in this book. Mm-hmm. I think it really elevates the story, and the story's doing well too. It's like much larger storytelling going on in this, in King Spawn, than we've seen in this sort of Spawn world in a long time. And I like that this sort of focuses on a almost a heist storyline while touching on the larger things. It's very melodramatic, and I don't have the depth of Spawn knowledge to be like, I understand why these characters are so upset, but I appreciate that they are, and the fact that the art is epic at the same time the story is broadening out makes for a fun read.
Fables 151 from DC Comics, written by Bill Willingham, art by Mark Buckingham. In case you couldn't figure out by the numbering, in an absolutely bonkers way, years later, this is just straight up continuing the story of Fables, going from 150, the final issue of the title, to 151. Here we're back in it again.
Just like how Bacardi 151 picks up on the storylines of Bacardi 150 and all the ones that came before. Mm-hmm. I appreciate this.
I missed Bacardi 37 and I haven't been able to keep up, since, but you know.
Yeah. That was the issue where you woke up on the beach wasted.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, this is just like a feel good where you know, it's like, holy shit, is it back? Oh my god, it's the same team. What are they gonna pick up? Oh, right where we left off. It just feels so great to be back. They're doing the same magical things with the paneling and all the stuff in between the panels. This is just such a cool idea. And this classic story of like, hey, old guy, your time is over. The new team's here to take over. So fun idea, cool continuation, exciting to see what this means for everybody in kind of Fable Town. So I'm in it to win it and very excited that it's back.
Oh, what are you planning on winning? Actually, let me ask you, Pete. When
more
you
Fables.
Say that, when you say the story is about a new person coming over to kick out the old person, which side do you fall on as you're reading this?
Well, you know, as you know, a young reader, I was on the young side, but now as an old guy, you know, it's kind of like, hey, you didn't earn your stripes yet, you know, Sonny. Why don't you get back in line? You know, so it's interesting how when you read stories and you change, but the story is the same, different things you take away from it. Last Unicorn is still a fucking nightmare.
Wow. Touching on stuff randomly across the world. This reading this comic, to take Pete's point a little bit, is a time machine. It really did take me back.
Yeah.
Picking it up here and being able to dive right back in. I had it, just visions of myself walking around Midtown Comics. How many years ago? A decade is when this was regularly coming out and wrapping up. And picking up this, being so excited to pick up this book, reading it like on the subway going to like a commercial audition. And I was like, holy shit. So I'm time traveling in my own life reading this. And then to actually have the characters be not time traveling and instantly still in the same headspace, moving forward without any, written confidently and drawn perfectly without any sort of break. This just doesn't happen in comics. So it's super exciting and sort of unheralded, this new release here. It's just like happening.
Well, I'll throw out something as a counterpoint, because I'm also, I agree with you guys, it didn't miss a beat, but Fables went on too long story-wise anyway is one thing that I'll throw out there.
What the fuck?
It did. It did.
Well, I understand why you say
you
that.
Remember
because...
the, like, the Fable War and everything that happened? That was crazy.
But here's what happened. Bill Willingham has said this. He was like, I got to the end I wanted to tell, and I was like, I'm just going to keep going. Mm-hmm. So he blew through his ending into like new stuff, and it didn't have the same narrative impact. I think most everyone agrees with that. But I also think I enjoyed having more story to tell.
Totally. I'm 100% on board with that. Yeah. Just my question going into this is like, is that more... what is going to happen here at this point? Is that more of that? What is the purpose for bringing it back at this point? Why are we continuing at Fables 151? I am looking that gift horse straight in the mouth. I'm sticking my head in that mouth and I'm checking how many teeth that horse has. Oh, and I want to know how many teeth before I buy the horse. That's all I'm saying.
Alex, you're made of oats. You can't be in a horse's mouth, because that horse is going to eat you to shreds.
Fair point.
Get out of that horse's mouth. Because I don't think we're going to get some sort of epic grand scale thing, because that wasn't in the plan. I think we're going to get one more loop closed on these characters. But I do think that Bill and Mark are telling a story that is about now, what they think. Like, I think Pete talking about like a new guard taking over for an old guard feels very much like a story that these guys would want to tell now, having been in comics for like decades. So I think there's good fodder here for a new story that isn't as grand scale as you're talking about. But
so
it's still
you're saying
worthwhile.
It'll be like the original run was like the Dirty Harry of runs, and this run is going to be more like the Gran Torino of runs.
Oh,
no
come
one
on.
Wants that comparison. No one is. No one is.
Yeah, that was horrible.
No one's like, where's my next Gran Torino?
I do think, you know, after all this time, though, that I'm sure that they have more stories to tell, and they should be given the opportunity to tell those stories.
We'll see. Yeah. Prove it. I want to see these kids prove it.
Or, you know, maybe
they truly are.
I was going to say, maybe it's an idea where these, you know, fabled characters get this amazing deal with Fox, and then Fox just kind of like takes their idea and then kicks them to the side. You know what I mean?
ABC. Wow. ABC is what it is.
ABC.
It's
fine. Also, Pete's
get
Mad
your
at Fox
chattels
too.
Right, man.
Yeah. The Fox is a great comic we just talked about. But I think this comic is truly Unforgiven and more of the mule for what we're talking about.
Oh, boy. The Shaolin Cowboy, Cruel to Be Kin, number one from Dark Horse Comics by Jeff Darrow. In this issue, the Shaolin Cowboy fights a giant lizard in the desert, and then that lizard's son eats him, and some other stuff goes on. This book is absolutely wild.
Spoilers, dude. Jesus H.
That spoils barely any of the book. Jeff Darrow's art, as always, is bananas good.
Whoa, okay, what's Pete going to say then?
Yeah, exactly.
But, man, I love this. I had such a blast reading it. Pete?
It's worth it for the art alone. Yeah, I just think that this is just a magical book. Brings you into a magical world, tells a fantastic story, doesn't use a lot of words. You know what I mean? Lets the picture really tell the tale. Very creative, very cool. Just a fun ass comic is what this is.
It is that. That Shaolin Cowboy feels like a guy on vacation. Like he's an older guy who's like on vacation, and he's just like, well, I guess I gotta go fight some stuff all the time, which I think is fun. The art is beautiful, and it is, the book is having fun with what's happening in it.
Hell yeah.
A Town Called Terror, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Steve Niles, art by Szymon Kondrowski. We were, I think, a little bit mixed about the first issue, which found a guy being summoned back to his town where only monsters live. Justin, if I remember correctly, in particular, you said it felt like we didn't really get any information on anything in that first issue. Here he is back in the town. He's talking to his dad. He beats up a Frankenstein at a bar. How are you feeling about
spoilers,
all of it now?
Jesus H.
Who
he didn't say
cares?
Which Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, when we're talking about
I'm talking about a doctor. He beat up a doctor because, as we all know, Frankenstein is the doctor, not the monster.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good a call. Great point. When we're talking great about a T called T2, it's a book that is drawn in a fun way, dark. But the story is still being a little bit coy with the details, you know?
Well, all right.
We still don't know what's happening. We know we have some siblings.
I feel like this does a good job moving the story forward just enough to kind of get you a little bit more excited about what's happening. Plus, the fight sequence is insane. The use of reds and blacks in this issue is really a fantastic for kind of the horror tone of everything. Creatively and visually, this is a really fun package.
Well, Nightwing number 92 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo. In this issue, we are getting Nightwing dealing with the fallout of setting up a nice little town square with a tribute to Alfred Pennyworth. And you
hell
know what?
Yeah.
Blockbuster does not like that, okay? He does not like a statue. He doesn't like a pleasant little park to hang out in. And he's coming right for him. We're also getting a flashback sequence here, courtesy Bruno Redondo, going back in the time that has some old school art into it. This book continues to be phenomenal every single issue. I love it. The end.
One of the best, if that's the end, then I'm also happy. I would say no more.
Please go ahead.
I love this book also. This is one of the best books on the stands. And we get to the flashback is like perfectly composed. We're getting so much Dick Barbara love in this comic, which I'm here for. And I gotta say that Alfred's statue is a little on the nose.
Let me be honest. Come on, dude. Because honestly, if you're walking around this garden
and you're like, the statue is like, hey, sometimes heroes don't need to wear masks or whatever. And it's like, who's it? This guy's the butler for Batman. It's revealing the whole game. You can't put mask on a butler statue.
Unbelievable.
Sometimes Batman's need sandwiches.
Ugh, boo. All right, so don't ruin this for me. All right, this is... All right. First off, Nightwing continues to be one of the best comics on the shelf, and it has been for a long-ass time, all right? Taylor's run, Seeley's run.
We agree with you. You don't have to fight with us.
Well, no, fuck you. You got your turn. Now it's my turn to talk about this.
We're all saying the same thing. We all agree. We're all friends.
Counterpoint, I like this.
Fuck. Yeah. No, I like this.
I can't fucking say my piece on this.
No,
or
you
what?
Can say it.
Well, then
it's just
shut
funny.
The fuck up.
It's just funny you're pushing back against someone who also agrees with you.
I don't care. All right. So I just think that it's like really well done, super creative, and you're goddamn right, Alfred deserves a statue. Hell yeah. And a nice little adorable park. I think it was great to see Ace. I think this
the
is
dog.
Just... Yeah, of course. And I just think this is a fun... fantastic book that continues to deliver issue after issue. Shut the fuck up.
Well, but let me say, disagree. I agree.
Let me, yeah, agreed. To agree to disagree to agree. But let me say, don't you think that inscription should have been on the statue, should have been something a little more coy? It's a little too close to saying, like, I'm Batman's butler friend.
Not close enough.
What would you put on the statue for words? Like, gray at cucumber sandwiches.
Maybe I would have put something like Alfred, you know, more than a butler, more than somebody being a comfort or a constant in somebody's life. Don't overlook people, you pieces of shit.
A little long for an inscription. You're not writing my gravestone.
You're goddamn right.
It was a pretty large statue, and it felt like a missed opportunity to say, I like big butlers.
Oh, my God.
I like big butlers, and I cannot lie.
The Wrong Earth, Purple, number one from Ahoy Comics, written by Stuart Moore and David Hyde, art by Fred Harper and Carol Lay. This is taking place in the 1989 Batman universe, except for Dragonfly Man. This continues to be Batman, but not quite, and taking on some satirical properties here. Here we get a Joker who is very like Prince, who coincidentally provided the soundtrack for the 1989 Batman movie. What do you think about this one? Pete, you said that's right.
Yeah, I was just talking about the Prince stuff. Yeah, it's nice to see Prince get some do. You know what I mean? Nice little Purple shout out. Nice kind of fun character. It kind of feels a little. Yeah, you know. So, it was cool to kind of see super creative, fun design. Felt very 80s at the same time. Yeah, I think this is really well drawn and well executed.
I like this as well. Ahoy Comics continues to just have fun with a lot of their books. And this is doing the same thing to, like you said, Alex, to tell a story that is right next to the original Batman movie, but exploring it in like a more sort of self-aware way, I think is maybe a good way of putting it, is just a fun read.
Agreed. Bolero, number five from Image Comics, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Luana Vecchio. This is the final issue of Bolero, a multiverse jumping love story that comes to an end here. Or does it? There's a little bit of a question mark there at the end. Justin, I know you were super into this one in particular. How'd you feel about how it wrapped up?
I like it. I think this is a beautifully drawn book. It's touching on interesting things that are sort of very much in the zeitgeist in our comic book world, as a multiverse of madness is where we all dwell. And the fact that they pinned it on such a specific relationship and a character that makes mistakes, makes poor choices a lot, but we are constantly understanding the motivation why, is very fun. And I think this will be a great full piece to read if you haven't been picking it up.
Pete, what about you?
Yeah, really great art, some very interesting storytelling, kind of tripped out fun.
I agree with what you were saying, Justin, in terms of reading it as a whole. I feel like reading it month to month, I lost a little bit of a track of the characters just because there was so much space there, or there were other things we were reading. But ultimately, what I think was really good about this was the connection between the two main characters. It sort of purposefully broke apart as it went on, not just in terms of the characters breaking apart, but even down to the lettering breaking it apart and becoming shakier as it went, as the main character became shakier. And just like you were saying, from an artistic perspective, absolutely beautiful. Definitely pick this up in collection. Next up, Batman the Knight, number five from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Carmine Giandomenico. In this issue, Batman, or rather young Bruce Wayne, is continuing his training, this time with another youth who is also looking for similar training. And here they are learning about subterfuge. They're learning about disguise. And specifically, Bruce Wayne is learning he's not that charming. He's not a charming guy.
Yeah, he's got to be. Ugh. You got to work on it. You got to work the people a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been exposed to that lesson, but I understand how it happens.
Oh, my God. Shut up. I love all the twists and turns in this comic. Really amazing art. Cool exploration of the Batman character. This is just this series has been a ton of fun.
I've never really read a story where we flash back into Bruce Wayne's life. So it was really refreshing to see get a look at sort of a younger version of the character dealing with some stuff. But joking aside, this does still add, still carves out a piece in the well-trod Batman Begins or Batman Year One canon to find some interesting stuff. The art is truly fantastic. Cassandra Nova, all I could think of was Cassandra Nova from this character that pops up here. Which was
because she's a bald lady.
Well, and like literally looks like Cassandra Nova.
Sure.
Even beyond that, the eyebrows, the villainness.
Sure, yeah.
The fact that her name is Nisandra Kova.
Yeah, that had a big part to do with it.
Yeah, this is great. Next up, Black Hammer Reborn number 12 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Caitlin Yarsky. This is the final issue of Black Hammer Reborn as we are kicking off yet another Black Hammer series, ominously titled Black Hammer, The End.
Whoa.
But here
feels.
Yeah, it feels like things are definitely ending here. The last issue was one of my favorite issues of this run. As we went back to the farm, we found out that the new Black Hammer's children were in fact alive. She is dealing with the repercussions of that in this issue. She thought they were dead the entire time. Is she going to save the multiverse? Is she going to be with her children? That's the big conflict here. Love how this plays out. It's so big. It's so phenomenal. What did you guys think, though?
Well, yeah, it was cool to see Skull Digger get an upgrade. That was really cool. Yeah, it's this classic kind of like setup of the kind of hero's choice or the hero's burden. Like, does the hero choose to be happy or does the hero choose to sacrifice himself and family or whatever for the greater good of saving the day? And here we kind of get an interesting choice that kind of really has crazy effects on everybody else. Yeah, I was really surprised by what I saw and how it kind of unfolded, which really talks to the writing and kind of the way things are kind of done in this way. Yeah, just super creative, very cool character designs. This has been just a fun run.
I feel like so. Black Hammer does this sort of amazing thing of creating this super team in this universe that is like a Justice League and Avengers sort of analog.
Right.
And plays it out. But most stories like that, it's like a 4-issue or 6-issue series. And it's like, yeah, what if they ended up being babies at the end or whatever the premise is? This just plays out ideas using these characters and really goes for it as opposed to so much else. And to get into, and we see characters making the choice they don't make, like Pete's talking about a character that's like, you know what, I'm not gonna do the crossover.
Yeah.
And like, that's exciting, that like to see the same,
we never
character.
See that. Yeah,
no. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that's where the heat is for Black Hammer for me. When I read it, I'm like, oh wow, to see the Martian Manhunter type character have different qualities and make different choices that are perhaps more rooted in real human emotions, mm-hmm. is exciting. And that's what every part of this series has done really well. And so to tip into the end where we find out where these characters will finally go, is really exciting. Like, we get, there's such a direct reference. We get the Parliament of Weirds or whatever. And it's like, that's straight out of Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's different here. It means something else. They're not as good as Reed Richards in a good way, in a way where I'm like, oh, this is recognizable but interesting.
Great stuff. Next up, here's another ending, Rain number 5 from Image Comics, story by Joe Hill, art by David M. Boer, art by Zoe Thorogood. We had David M. Boer and Chris Ryle, the editor of this, on the live show a couple of months back, so definitely check that out.
Hey, do we talk to him about Rain?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, no,
It was pretty weird. We had the team on and we instead talked to them about Sun.
The crazy thing is we talked about just regular Rain. We talked about like the weather. We were like, oh yeah, I like Rain, just like emotionally walking around in the rain.
So this takes place in a world where rain is falling like needles. It is killing off people very quickly. We are following one main character who suffered loss there, and a lot of stuff comes out. The truth comes out by the end of this
issue. Yeah, we get to kind of see the story behind the rain.
Now, I'm very curious to hear from you guys, because I did read the short story that this was based on before this came out, so I had a very different experience, I imagine, reading this title than you guys did. How did this ending strike you in particular?
I thought it was good. I really thought it made a lot of sense. Also, heartbreaking the way this thing ends. Just very emotional, a lot going on. But yeah, and very, also very powerful and very cool. I was very impressed with this. Arp is bananas good. And I think there's some really cool character studies in this. Very creative.
At the end of the last issue, I think we said, there's another issue? Like, it feels like we wrapped everything up, a lot of emotional stuff. And this issue brings a lot of plot conclusion to us, which is something that I never... This series did such a good job of telling its story without needing to know a lot of why. And this issue brings a lot of why together. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, and I liked it. But I was also like much more interested in where our characters ended up, and was treated to some sad things that I was like, oh, I didn't need to see the sad things happen.
Well, you did. You saw it.
I know.
But
a lot of sad things happened in earlier issues, too.
I'm just going to back up what you're saying, though, Justin, because that was kind of my reaction to the comic book series versus the short story. I think ultimately the plot stuff worked a lot better in the short story, the way that it was set up, the way that it played out. There's more time spent there on the causes of the rain and why it's happening and people talking about that. And to your point, this comic book excelled in emotion. A lot of that was through David and Boer's writing, but also particularly Zoe Thorogood's art, which was so beautiful and so heart-thrilled throughout the run. That I agree with you. When we got to this final issue, I was like, I like this. But it felt like it came out of nowhere a little bit, even though I knew exactly where we were going. Again, having read the story, but still, great series, definitely worth checking out.
I just want to kind of quickly say, because I feel like I hear what you're saying, but also the fact that at the end we do get inside these characters' heads and get the why, I think was super important for the ending. And for me, I felt like, we really got to know a lot of characters' motivation. And yes, it was kind of a little bit of an info dump at the end, but I didn't mind, because of the slow kind of burn of everything else, that it kind of made this last issue a little bit more explosive and kind of cracked things open in an interesting way. So I really appreciated it.
Yeah, you're gonna love how rain happens for us too when you figure that out.
Okay, are you secretly doing something evil with rain that I should know about?
Let me know. You let me know from your end how it feels.
Oh boy.
Wonder Woman Evolution number 7 from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Stefano Raphael. In this issue, we get a big bunch of revelations about what has been going on with Wonder Woman, why she has been put through these trials, why Silver Swan has been there a bunch of times, what exactly is going on with this weird doctor who is testing Wonder Woman. I thought this was great. I'm loving this series. I'm very excited about the end here. I think this has been a weird, interesting, twisty Wonder Woman story that I can't wait to see how it all turns out.
Yeah. Real quick, Pete, it was vodka tonic rain. I'm trying to make vodka tonic rain for
that's
you.
That's going to be like, very dangerous.
Just be something. Very... It's like a birthday present for you.
Yeah, and what sucks is I like vodka soda, so the tonic's going to be a little extra sting on there that really
that's
hurts.
That's burning you in that way.
Exactly. So, the Wonder Woman Evolution number 7. I love the kind of villain that we kind of get to spend some time with. I'm very excited for the setup for Wonder Woman versus this villain. I think the stakes and the setup here that we're getting in this issue is great. I agree with Zalbin. This has been a ton of fun, and I'm having a great time here.
It's such a weird Wonder Woman story, and I say that as a compliment. Like, Wonder Woman is out of the normal storytelling range where it's like myths coming for her. This is like into like technology and out into a whole other space. And I like that, and I think it really works.
I also want to point out that there is like a variant cover where Wonder Woman is beheading Medusa, and the Medusa on that cover is just so unbelievable. It's very enjoyable. Worth checking
Meduse.
Out.
Meduse!
The Meduse!
Snakeheads are your kink, though, right, Pete?
Nope. Let's not put that out there.
Okay.
Well, it is, though. It's going to be our secret. No. We'll cut this part out.
Yeah, sure. We do a lot of great editing on this show.
Oh, thanks, man. Slumber number 3 from Image Comics, written by Tyler Burton Smith, art by Vanessa Cardinale. Sure, we'll edit that part too. Yeah. In this issue, our dream hunters are finally closing in on the weird being who has been invading their lives for a very long period of time. We get some
causing
twists
problems.
There. I love this book. I'm having such fun reading it. There's weird, messed up things that happen in every single issue. It's a blast.
It is a blast. There's a lot of like crazy twists and turns and things that happen that you're just like, what the fuck?
It's a blast. It's a shotgun blast to the chest at one point in this issue.
Yeah. Insane art. Really cool. Just over the top fun. It's very impressive the speed and the pace that this comics maintains. I really enjoy it. It's definitely worth checking out. Bananas art.
The art and story feel like a combination of two things I really enjoy, Adventure Time and Ren and Stimpy. Mm-hmm. Sort of like an edgier Ren and Stimpy in a cool way, while at the same time having this sort of underlying story of being of people hunting nightmares in their lives. So, it's all in happy places for me.
Last but not least, as mentioned, this was requested by Sky Juggler over on Apple Podcast. Asterios Polyp, a graphic novel by David Mazzucchelli. If you never read this, this is a book about a architect. I believe he's an architect, right?
Yep,
who
architect.
Goes on a journey of self-discovery after his home burns down. It is narrated by the spirit of his twin brother who died in the womb. And it shows, jumps back and forth throughout his entire life, showing how he is broken, shows how he got there, shows the love of his life and what happened there, as well as other various parts. It deals with some of the major themes of it. It deals with duality, of course, because you got the two brothers, among other things. But also, one of the things that makes this book so phenomenal is David Mazzucchelli playing with design and playing with form down to, I believe this is the version you have there, Justin. The cover is smaller than the book, specifically to draw attention to the design of the spine, the book. That's the level of meticulous detail that's in there. Things fall apart into geometric shapes throughout the panels, and coloring are specifically laid out throughout. This is legitimately one of my favorite graphic novels, but also I think generally recognized as one of the best graphic novels of all time. It was a pleasure to revisit it again because it's been a very long time since I've read this one, and it continues to be as phenomenal as the first time I've read it. It's a hard read because the character of Asterios Polyp is not a great guy as you're following him, kind of a terrible guy, in fact. And I imagine that probably we'll get to in a second, points to one of the things that Pete probably didn't like about it. But Justin, you have a copy there. You were flipping through it. What did you think about this one?
I mean, like you said, beautiful art that is its own sort of story throughout, underlying like all the character stuff that is driving the main narrative here. It reminded me of a lot of, rereading it now, it reminded me of a lot of just elemental things that I was like, oh, I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. One of my favorite cartoons growing up was called Donald in Math Magic Land. Mm-hmm. Does this ring any bells? Yeah. It's a Disney cartoon where Donald Duck goes through math and he's like not good at it, but we see all this great like math history and math that is sort of happening to Donald Duck. And that feels like a tonal layover on this book, where it's like a character who is dealing with a lot of aspects of his life, the narration sort of being a part of that, laid on a character that doesn't understand perhaps his motivations throughout, which is really cool. And then like, another graphic novel to reference, sort of, that is one of, held up as one of the best of all time, is Blankets. And this has a little bit of that as well, I think, in it. If you're a fan of that but haven't read this, I would recommend it. Blankets, dealing with a character struggling with his own sort of internal religious versus like life choices, I guess. And this sort of has that same thing where it's a character going against their philosophy in different, at different times, and eventually, and then just living their lives, I guess, is a way, a good way to put it.
All right. Great. My turn. Yeah. So there's some things I agree with. I think the art is bananas. It's very interesting, very kind of tripped out in a heady way. I love the shout outs to Ithaca, New York. Makes a lot of sense, you know, but it just kind of reminds me of somebody that I know who just likes to talk and is just kind of like self-absorbed, self-interested, you know, just kind of like one of these Cornell people who just like to blah, 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 blah. I like this to hear my own voice, you know, type of people. So it's hard to spend the whole time with somebody that is driving you insane. You know what I mean? And Hannah, you know, finally sticks up for herself, is like, you're a piece of
shit.
Can
I just give a little bit of context? In the book, Hannah is sort of Asterios Polyp's true love, or at least his longest continuous relationship. She is the opposite personality from him, almost. And the touch point there, I believe, is Orpheus and Eurydice is the myth that he's playing off of there. So she's driven away. She goes to hell. She goes to the underworld. You could probably pause it from there, but go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, so she finally sticks up for herself and is like, hey, you're a piece of shit. I'm out of here. And then kind of later in life, they reconnect and he's grown as a person. And she kind of puts up with them, puts up with him for a little bit. I just think that, like, first off, great ending, very cool, kind of heady stuff, which is enjoyable. But the problem with having a douchebag as a main character is it's just a little bit infuriating. Still, with all that being said, you know, it does achieve some incredible things as a comic.
It's interesting to me, Pete. Is there a story you can point to that you love, where the main character is not the hero or a hero? Where the main character is
gravel,
like,
no, not, you know, maybe concrete. Gravel, concrete. I was just thinking,
because I would say Concrete's a hero. Gravel is interesting. That's interesting.
Because he's kind of a douche.
Gravel is an ingredient in a lot of Concrete. So that's
but like Gravel, he's this kind of magician who's not light. You know what I mean? So he's kind of not a hero. I don't know. Yeah, I do like
to. This is not a criticism.
But you're right, though, because it's like real life is hard. People are douches. So in comics and these things, I like them to be inspiration, show what's great about people, be better than, you know what I mean? So I guess, you're right. This isn't going to fall into my wheelhouse.
But that's not a knock. Like, I totally understand that. My taste goes across the sort of a little different direction, I think, than yours, where like a character that makes the wrong choice is interesting to me, because that's something that
like we were talking about with Black Hammer, that, you know, the different choice
100%. And like, that's a little bit triggering, where it's just like, oh, that's there's something about like my life and like always being like, I'm the oldest in my family, always like oh, you're like, do the right thing, and like to read a story where someone's like, nah, I'm not gonna do that, I'm like, oh boy, this is titillating, what's it like to do that? So like, I appreciate that in this character, where they're like a little bit of a dick, and they're like just, they're like selfish in a way, and like, so there's something about that that I actually like to see, and it helps that it is fictional, so I don't have to own the stakes of this person's choices. in what happens.
Well, and I also think there is something to be said for, and this is something that I think the book deals with as well, in terms of art making you feel uncomfortable, that a lot of comics we get, we read, we have reviewed in the stack tons of books where the heroes are like, I'm going to do the right thing. And we're always going to win because of that. That's not what this is. This is providing, like you're saying, Justin, something entirely different. And it's pushing against that and giving us, frankly, a more realistic portrayal of a human being, because often we think we're doing the right things, but we're actually leading ourselves down a deep, dark, terrible path, like happens here. I mean, not to call out another myth, but there's also shades of Odysseus that are in here as well. And Odysseus in the Odyssey is not a great guy either. Like, he's kind of a hero, but also does some pretty terrible shit.
Well, and that's what I love about using mythology as sort of a touch point, because, like, those stories, which were, like, we don't know, I guess, really, but like we are taught that they were guiding principles for the ancient Greeks or whatever. And they like talked about them like, well, you remember Odysseus fucked up. But they were flawed. All those characters like messed up constantly. And if we as a society like idolize people who messed up all the time, we would be in a way better place, because it would be so much easier for us to understand ourselves. We're like, well, this character, this god I worship is selfish and messes up all the time, and we see the price they pay for it. I understand that better, and I identify with that. And so that's why I appreciate that.
I mean, I think I understand what you're saying, but I also do think things like the Greek myths teach important lessons, like the one where Zeus turns into a swan and then fucks that lady. The lesson there is don't fuck a swan, you know?
Yeah, and that's something that I think back in ancient Greece is like, God, all these people are fucking swans. How do we stop that?
Let's write a myth. I do. There are panels that really stick with me. There's this one panel where it's just kind of like the invisible kind of cut out of the main character, and the main character gets on the train, but the invisible person stays on the kind of like on the platform, and it just, I was like, ah, like, no, you know, just the choice that made, and just kind of the emotion that evokes is really impressive.
Well, that's why I think this book does a great job of not saying like, this guy's cool, he's doing all the right things. It's sort of like, let's examine this person. And that to me is like great myths out there. Like, that's what we examine this person. And we're not like, I'm going to do exactly what Narcissus does. Like, no, you're like, oh, hey, it's not cool to just look at your reflection in a pond your whole life. You're going to turn into a fucking flower.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Or if you don't make the right wish, if you wish for eternal life but not eternal youth, you're going to be a grasshopper, buddy.
No, boy.
Yeah, see? These are all great lessons and that I use every day. Every day I do that.
That explains a lot.
You should check out Asterios Polyp, though, which legitimately is a beautiful piece of art and also at times kind of a fun read, even when it's really tough to read. So I don't want to undervalue that either. It's a very enriching experience if you've never checked it out. Thank you, Sky Juggler, for suggesting it. Really appreciate that.
Sky Juggler, you got a lot on your plate, too. So like, keep juggling that sky.
Sky Juggler.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
And I'm going to be at the banana shop getting all these bananas that Pete is talking about.
Yeah.